On a chilly November day, thousands of people are waiting in line on West 34th Street, New York City. Bundled up against the cold, they've been standing for hours in front of the famous department store Macy's. Now, when the doors finally swing open, absolute chaos erupts. Everyone is desperate to get their hands on the latest must-have. Nylon stockings. Nope, this is not a Black Friday sale. This exact scene took place in 1945 during the so-called nylon riots, when a shortage of stockings led to queues of the kind we now associate with Black Friday, or Taylor Swift concerts. On that day, 50,000 pairs of nylon stockings are said to have passed over the counter at Macy's in just 6 hours. In this episode, we're going to be diving into the story of materials. And we start with nylon because it was the first synthetic fibre to be mass-produced for fashion. It all started with a chemist. His name was Wallace Hume Carruthers, who was working on an alternative to silk for the US chemical company DuPont. His invention was revolutionary, a stretchy, incredibly durable polymer derived from petroleum. Just a few years later, nylon stockings from DuPont were so popular that they sold out within minutes of hitting the shelves. Then, during the Second World War, nylon's role shifted. It was taken off the civilian market and became a vital resource for the military, used in parachutes, tents, and more. The material had many advantages. It's lightweight, elastic, shrink-proof, and most importantly, tear-resistant. Now, when the war ended in 1945, DuPont resumed nylon production for civilians. Newspapers shouted, this is a real headline, "Peace, it's here! Nylon's on sale!" Exclamation point. After years of shortages, the demand was enormous. No wonder people queued all over the US to buy their pairs of stockings. From scarcity to mass market. It's hard to imagine tights ever being in short supply today. They're available in every corner drugstore. But with abundance came another shift, this time in quality. And we're not only talking about tights. Today's fashion market has become increasingly fast-paced, with a constant stream of products that we don't yet know if we'll want tomorrow, that are often of poor quality. The wardrobes of Western countries are full, much of it never worn. Meanwhile, textile waste keeps rising. So how can we relearn to recognise quality, to truly value the clothes that we wear, and to make them last? Welcome to The Fashion Stitch, a new podcast on fabrics, facts, and feelings, brought to you by Urquitex, where we look behind the scenes of sustainability in fashion. I'm your host, Claire Press, a fashion storyteller and sustainability nerd. One of the questions I often get asked is, which fabric is the most sustainable? And I always wish I could give a simple answer, but usually I can't. It depends on so many variables. What I can do, though, in this episode, is share some useful information to help you choose which materials you're going to get the most wear out of. Sounds good? Good. As always, we're bringing you insider knowledge, and this time we've got some fantastic interviews with experts who know quality when they see it and make the best of it, even under difficult circumstances. Ready? Here we go. Looking back, the invention of nylon stockings marks the start of something big, the mass production of synthetic fibres in fashion. What began as a cutting-edge invention in the lab of Wallace Hume Carruthers is now just a small slice of the massive man-made fibre market. Synthetic fibres are produced through chemical processes and are not obtained from natural raw materials like cotton or wool. Or, in the case of man-made cellulosics, trees for viscose. Synthetics, however, are derived from oil, coal or natural gas, and then spun into filaments. Textiles like nylon, polyester and elastane are usually known for their strength and durability, But if you've ever worn tights, you'll know how easily they can tear. That's because today's tights are made from ultra-fine yarns, knitted into lightweight, stretchy fabrics that hug the body. They're designed for comfort and aesthetics, not for durability. And that's exactly why most of them don't last. All right, I'm going to dazzle you with facts now. Synthetic fibres, like I said, are based on petroleum, a non-renewable raw material. Now, I've gathered a few numbers here, so stick with me because it's quite mind-blowing. Approximately 70% of clothing is made from synthetic fibres such as polyester or nylon. Polyester is the most produced fibre on the global market, accounting for 54%. Synthetics have a microfibre problem. Every time we put our cozy polyester fleece in the washing machine, tiny plastic microfibers escape into the environment and our food chain. Shockingly, some studies suggest that up to 35% of the primary microplastics in our oceans come from washing synthetic clothing alone. By the way, you'll find the sources for all the figures mentioned here in the show notes. They're cheap, they're easy to care for, and they're ubiquitous. No doubt, synthetics have a huge part to play in fueling fashion's trend cycle and overproduction problem. And you know how it is with trends. They're quick to fade. So what are some of the reasons that you've gotten rid of clothing? Because it's out of fashion? Because it doesn't fit anymore? Because it's fallen apart? You've probably donated or resold clothes that just don't spark joy. If so, you're not the only one. Globally, some garments are estimated to be discarded after just 7 to 10 wears. And according to the European Environment Agency, global textile fibre production is expected to rise to 145 million tonnes by 2030. The big thing to know, that is an increase of 150% compared to the year 2000. Now, I know this is a lot of numbers, but the bottom line is, in countries with higher incomes, people own more clothes than they can ever wear. They wear their clothes less often and they throw them away more frequently. But where do these unwanted clothes end up? While some textiles will be turned into cleaning rags or things like car seat stuffing, and a tiny fraction might get recycled into new yarn or upcycled into new clothing, most of this flows into the global used clothing resale market. Yaira Egbofa is a creative activist and founder of The Revival, a Ghana-based upcycling community organisation based in the Kantamanto market, which is one of the largest secondhand clothing markets in the world. As he tells us, based on his own research and experience on the ground, every week around 60 containers of secondhand clothing arrive in the port city of Timor, Ghana's most important trading and industrial centre. From there, the clothes are sent to Accra, where they end up at Kantamanto Market. Kantamanto has thousands of stores, stalls, and makeshift stands. For years, the community here has skillfully washed, repaired, and repurposed secondhand garments for resale. And it's a vital economic hub, employing around 30,000 people, from traders and artisans to porters and support services. We called Yaira Egbofa and asked him to give us a sense what happens with all this discarded clothing that ends up at the Kantamanto market.
The materials that end up in Kantamanto are primarily secondhand clothing imported from Europe, the US, Asia. And these include garments in various conditions, some wearable, some damaged, some unsellable. Alongside the clothing, the market also sees, you know, items like factory offcuts or items like t-shirts, dresses, blouses, jackets, coats, denim, jeans, whatever is being consumed in Europe, in the global north, are those kind of things that end up here. The most materials that come here are synthetic material, which are mainly fast fashion brands and mainly materials like polyester and mixed fiber. When you talk about quality of clothing, unfortunately, the overall quality has worsened. This creates a challenge for traders and artisans who have to deal with more waste or less resale value. How we measure the quality of the clothing that arrives in Katamantu is through, you know, quality assessments, which involves checking the fabric conditions, the seams, the stains, that are level of stains, the tears, and the overall wear. So traders or retailers often sort through bales upon their arrival into separate good quality items from those that are damaged beyond resale. And then we also use both visual and experience-driven judgments to categorize the materials for resale, upcycling, or for disposal. Trends also determine what we deem quality and sellable according to the demand patterns here in Accra. How we handle these large volumes is that we work closely with artisans and tailors to creatively repurpose, you know, worn or unsellable garments into new products. So like bags and accessories, home decor and fashion pieces. So for example, winter clothes, which are unsellable here, we work with artisans to transform them into items we can use here, which is one typical example is winter puffer jackets are being upcycled into backpacks and laptop sleeves. And then we also conduct sorting workshops and collaborate with the community to identify materials that are with potential. And then this approach reduces the waste and also at the same time is creating jobs and educating people about material compositions and the process of repurposing, recycling, and repairing. What we practice here is an act of resilience, and that is channeled and transformed into creativity and opportunity.
In 2023, a Greenpeace report concluded that over 96% of the textiles discarded at Katamantu are made from plastic. They also detected in the air traces of benzene, a chemical known to cause cancer. And Yaira told us that much of the unsellable textile waste finds its way to Jamestown and Old Fadama, home to the largest unsanctioned clothing dump near the Corlay Lagoon. The pollution and unsafe waste management there seriously harm both the environment and public health. Now, despite these hazardous conditions, some residents take part in informal recycling and sorting to earn a small income and to try to improve the situation. On top of this, a fire ripped through the Katamantu market in early 2025, destroying about 65% of the stores. The Revival and its partners quickly mobilised to help rebuild. When we spoke to Yaira, he said construction was still underway, but that 80% or about that of the community was already back at work. If you want to learn more about the Revival, do check out our show notes. Before we go on, it's time for a quick break to explain who is behind the podcast that you're listening to. The Fashion Stitch is brought to you by Erkatex. If you're a label reader, like me, you've probably seen this name in your clothing or home textiles. It represents safer, more sustainable choices. For over 30 years, Erkatex has been testing and certifying textiles. With education at heart and grounded in science, Erkatex aims to promote sustainability in the fashion industry and drive positive change. The Fashion Stitch came to life through a beautiful collaboration between Erkatex and the education and community platform Fashion Changers. For more than a decade, its co-founders Freni Jekler and Nina Lorentzen have been working to educate and advocate for a more sustainable and more just fashion industry. They're all about sharing collective knowledge and raising awareness for the sometimes hidden problems, but also the solutions in this industry. I could not love this more. I'm so excited to be part of it. Now, if you'd like to dive deeper, check the show notes for all the links or sign up to the Erkatex newsletter for extra background on this episode and from our experts. And now, back to the show. After listening to Yaira's story about Katamantu, you're probably asking yourself if you should avoid synthetic fibres. The golden rule, of course, is regardless of the material, you should wear it and make it last. If we choose a fibre that meets our needs and that fibre is made into a high-quality garment, then we're more likely to wear it for a long time. And hopefully it can be repurposed at the end of its life. We called Annika Sauerhofer, who is product manager for the Made in Green label at Erkitex, to learn more about fiber groups and their properties.
We have the different fiber groups, like the natural fibers, the synthetic fibers, and the man-made cellulosic fibers, and they all offer different properties. So, for instance, natural fibers like cotton, linen, or wool, they offer very good physiological comfort because they're breathable, they regulate the temperature well, they're skin-friendly, and they're also soft. But they can wrinkle easily. They can also shrink and they can wear out a bit faster. And that's where the synthetic fibers such as polyester or polyamide come into play, because they bring easy care properties. By that, I mean they dry faster, they resist wrinkles, and they also hold their shape better after washing. They are elastic and also more durable because they resist wear through high tensile and abrasion resistance. The downside from synthetic fibers is that they are less breathable on its own, and therefore they can feel less natural on the skin. And of course that they are made of fossil fuels. And then the third group is the man-made cellulosic fibers like lyocell, modal, or viscose. And they are also great for blending because they offer softness. They have a higher moisture absorbency than the natural fibers like cotton. That's great for breathability and also moisture management. They also help fabrics hold the color better and are, yeah, therefore great for active wear or for summer clothing. They are derived from natural resources, but they involve heavy chemical processes as well.
You've probably noticed that many of our clothes are made from blended fibers, for example, a mix of cotton and polyester. But have you ever wondered why? I know I have. Annika Sauerhofer has more.
So the blended fibers are made by combining different types of fibers to create a single yarn or a fabric. And by blending fibers, you mix and match their best characteristics, like softness, breathability, easy care, and so on, while reducing their individual drawbacks. So the goal is really to create fabrics with an all-around improved functionality. I think very important is that when you choose a blend, this should always be based on a specific function you need, because in the end, blending fibers makes recycling more complicated. So a brand should always ask, does this blend really serve a purpose? And you as an end consumer, you can ask yourself, for what do I actually need this garment? For instance, do I need it for active wear? For active wear, you probably look for a stretchy garment. You look for moisture control, you look for durability because it's more often washed. The garment should not wear out. And for this, blends are quite good because if you have polyester or polyamide, as I said before, they are durable, they increase abrasion resistance, that helps clothing last longer, especially in high friction areas. They are quick drying. And then you can add elastane, for instance, that brings stretch, which is also essential for movement, or you can add a lyocell or modal to it that brings softness and breathability. So for active wear, definitely a blend can make sense. Or also, if we go into another direction, for cold weather, you look for warmth, but you don't want to sweat. So you also look for breathability. And here is wool a really good choice because it keeps you warm. It regulates the temperature, so it's breathable. It's also odor resistant at the same time, but it requires a bit more care. You normally have to hand wash, or with a wool cycle, you have to use a special wool detergent. It's also more prone to pilling. And therefore, what you often see are common blends with polyamide, because polyamide is extremely abrasion resistant and it protects the wool from wear and tear. Or you can also have blends with natural fibers only. So for instance, you can also blend wool with silk. You do that because silk is a smooth fiber and therefore it also helps reduce pilling. So wool silk clothes are often used for baby clothes because they combine like the comfort, the temperature regulation, and silk is very skin friendly, which is important for small babies or toddlers as it prevents irritation of the skin. So choosing a blend should always be based on the specific function you need. So for everyday clothes, for instance, you don't normally need a specific function. So you can go for 100% cotton because it has the great physiological properties and makes you feel very comfortable, but you don't sweat that much. So you don't need the moisture control necessarily that another fiber brings. And when you have blended fibers, you should really have a look that the kind of higher quality fiber have more than 50% content so that the good physiological properties I mentioned still dominate. Because you can also see sometimes in fast fashion that there is only a small percentage of wool, for instance, mixed, and then you don't have the advantages of the wool anymore, actually.
When I listen to Yaira and Annika, what really stands out to me is that we need to reflect more carefully on the clothes that we buy and also on our needs. Do we really need moisture wicking or insulating features for a walk around the park? Now, by the way, if you're curious about functional clothing and the chemicals used in its production, I highly recommend you checking out our second episode all about chemicals and product safety. We're going to come on to what high quality means when it comes to our clothing and how we might recognize it. But first, I would like to point out that longevity, durability, and circularity have been a focal point for policymakers, especially in the European Union, for some time now. We asked Karolina Franica, stakeholder manager for Erkatex, who you might remember from our first episode, to briefly guide us through some of the most important regulatory developments within the so-called EU strategy for sustainable and circular textiles.
The EU wants our clothes to last longer, be easier to repair and recycle, and produced socially and environmentally more responsible by 2030. What does that mean? First, better quality of clothes. There will be new rules that will make brands design clothes that last longer, keep their shape, and don't fall apart after a few washes. Clothes should be also easier to repair. So if your favorite jacket rips or the zipper breaks, repair services and spare parts should be easier to find and more affordable. Brands will be no longer allowed to burn or throw away unsold clothing. So instead, they'll have to reuse, donate, or recycle it. Clothes will contain more recycled fibers and fewer harmful chemicals, intending to make them safer for you and also for the environment. And there should be clearer information when you shop. So labels and online information will tell you how to take care of your clothes, what they are made of, and how sustainable they are. And at the end, you'll have more choices to rent, resell, or recycle your clothes instead of throwing them away.
As we can clearly see, legislation can be a vital tool in transforming the fashion industry by promoting longer-lasting, repairable, and recyclable clothing, and by regulating the environmental impacts of textile production and waste. France has gone a step further and proposed restricting ultra-fast and fast fashion brands that do not meet minimum environmental standards. The measures include an eco-tax on cheap items, a ban on advertising, including social media and influencer partnerships, and an eco-score labelling system for transparency regarding environmental impact. You might have read about this, but the French Senate passed the bill in June of 2025. But at the time of recording, the law is not yet a done deal. It still needs to be approved by a joint committee and officially notified to the European Commission to ensure compliance with EU law before it can fully come into force. So it's a bit watch this space, I think. But hypothetically speaking, how might France restricting ultra-fast fashion impact the quality and longevity of our clothing? I asked Caroline.
France currently holds a front-runner position in the EU regarding circularity regulations. So they are trying out a lot of things. And I think at Erkatex, we review regulatories or regulations broadly as valuable tools driving positive change. This ultra fast fashion ban that really targets brands that churn out huge amounts of very cheap clothes in a short amount of time. That means fewer low quality items designed to be quickly discarded, which, for example, helps to reduce the huge amounts of textile waste that are polluting the environment. And with Ultra Fast Fashion Limited, brands may shift toward producing garments that last longer, both in style and also physical durability. This change could also boost the repair services and second-hand markets, making it easier and more affordable to fix your clothes or to buy quality pre-loved items. I think ultimately the ban is designed to encourage people to shift also their shopping habits. So buying fewer but better quality items that truly last.
Okay, so the outcome isn't yet certain, but I reckon this could be a game changer. But while we wait for possible legislation to come into force and take effect, there are things that we as active consumers or active citizens, I like that phrase, can do to preserve our clothing for as long as possible. We spoke to Monika Hauck. She's the managing director of the German company Repair Rebels, a digital repair service that brings together a wide range of craftspeople. You can book all kinds of repairs on the website, from luxury bags to jeans. You can even send in your broken umbrella. And we all know those break all the time. So, Monika, how can you tell if clothing is good quality? And what is the best way, do you think, to care for it?
So, my advice to the consumers who look for quality clothing is to first of all define what is quality for you, right? I think there are different factors. Is it softness? Is it durability? Or maybe is it fair production standards? What I learned, and I think in the meantime, we heard a lot in the press that high price doesn't always mean fair production. So buying expensive doesn't mean that, okay, the people are being paid fairly. Buying expensive doesn't mean that the product uses sustainable materials. Another thing which I think we need to realize and acknowledge that quality doesn't always equal longevity. But I have to admit that some very high quality, sustainable and natural materials are not the ones which last longest. And I think there is no secret why in landfills, the cheapest and the worst quality fabrics stay the longest, right? Because that indicates the longevity. So on one side, we want longevity. On the other side, we know that longevity often comes with use of synthetic materials. So my oldest piece of clothing is Tommy Hilfiger jogging pants, which I bought 25 years ago. They're pure synthetics, but they still look like new. Well, I think to make sure that your clothing lasts long, you should only buy what you really love, because what you love, you take care of. And I think it doesn't matter what sort of quality it has, or was it fast fashion, or was it a luxury good. So making sure that this was not an impulse purchase is the most important, so that you have emotional value to the product, not just economical value. And then, of course, there are many practical ways to take care of clothing and shoes. Washing less. We overwash our clothing. Washing clothing not that hot. Also less sun. Sun can cause colors to fade away. Drying or ironing, of course, is not ideal for the clothing, but it depends how often do you do and how good equipment do you use. So the less, the better. And I think another one is if things start to break, you need to take care of the problems and repair them straight away. Another good indicator is to look if things have been glued. So it's always better to buy clothing or shoes which are using less glues, but which are really stitched together, because this ensures reparability. At the same time, as we grow older, We also change our body shapes and typically looking for clothing which have extra fabric in the seam is also a good indication of quality and the fact that you can in the future maybe extend the size of the clothing. Also, of course, looking at the quality of zippers. Is it just a plastic zipper or is it a good quality metal zipper? Because zippers are very exhaustive to exchange and also can make repairs more challenging and more expensive. So zippers is definitely one topic that I would say worth considering. At the same time, also looking for spare parts, even asking the brand, do you provide spare parts? This could also be a great help.
Be honest, how much do you know about repairing a garment? Can you sew on a button? All right, I reckon most of us can manage that. But how about patching a hole? Is that getting tougher? Monica tells us that in her experience, many of us have forgotten how to repair things. Not because we don't want to, but because sewing is no longer part of our school curriculum. Meanwhile, specialist repair skills are gradually dying out, partly because there aren't enough apprentices. And then there's the price, which can deter some people from having things fixed. I mean, the argument is, why fix something if a new one is cheaper? But Monica is convinced that repair is a philosophy for life.
Price is a deal breaker for many people. And repair work, I think one thing what I can say for sure, AI will not exchange a repair person. You will always need a real person to evaluate the product and also to do the work. And the work is always individual. So, of course, there's a lot of labor which comes into it. And of course, repair is a luxury. Like our name, Repair Rebels, says, repair is an act of resilience. We encourage people to rebel against the system, to rebel against consumerism, and to take more control of their life and also of their belongings. The moment a person fixes a piece of clothing himself or herself, or the moment a person makes a piece of clothing, I think the appreciation for the clothing that we buy or the services that we get is way, way higher.
Which materials we decide to buy and wear is a constant process of deliberation. But in the end, you can purchase the most expensive or the most sustainable shirt on the market, but no item of clothing is truly sustainable if you don't wear it. One helpful way to think about value is the concept of cost per wear. The formula is quite easy. It's the price of the clothing divided by the number of times you wear it. For example, your $30 or 30 euro t-shirt costs $30 or 30 euros per wear if you only wear it once. But if you wear it 10 times, the cost per wear drops to just $3 or 3 euros. That's how we can say that investing in higher quality, longer lasting clothing can be more sustainable and economical in the long run. Ultimately, whether you're wearing a polyester shirt, a pair of nylon stockings or a wool sweater, I would encourage you to try to make it last. Thank you for tuning in to The Fashion Stitch on fabrics, facts and feelings. If we made you feel differently about your wardrobe, please share this podcast with a friend. If you'd like a deeper dive into the topic, check out the links in the show notes, or you can sign up for the Urquhartec's newsletter to get even more background information on this episode. Next week is all about psychology. We'll be delving into our shopping behaviour and looking at how data and transparency reshape the way we buy clothes. Wherever you're listening right now, don't forget to follow or subscribe to this podcast. It also really helps us get the word out and spread more awareness about what's happening behind the curtain of the fashion industry. The Fashion Stitch is brought to you by Urquhartec in partnership with Fashion Changers. Executive producer, Urquhartec. Idea and concept, Franny Yekler and Nina Lawrenson from Fashion Changers. Content editor and editorial for this episode was by Nina Lawrenson. Production, sound design and editing, Studio Ton Gutzer. Podcast cover design, also Franny Yekler. Production, Architects and Fashion Changers. And I'm your host, Claire Press. Special thanks to our expert guests for sharing their stories and to everyone behind the scenes who made this episode possible. Thank you for listening to The Fashion Stitch. I'll hear you soon.